4, starting at verse 2. In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst by a spirit of judgment and by a spirit of burning. Then the Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day and smoke and the shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for shade by day from the heat and for a refuge and a shelter from the storm and rain. Bill.
Thanks, Mark, very much indeed. And can I add my welcome to you? We are carrying on in our series in our Isaiah. When I was 14, I became a Christian. And yet, I didn't realize for the first 10 years of my Christian life, I didn't realize that the Bible is an epic story. I don't know if you realize that. A lot of people don't realize that. It's an epic story that makes The Lord of the Rings look like an episode of Coronation Street. It's an epic story of which God is it's all about God. The God who made the universe. He made this world. He watched as we rebelled against him. And then it's about the God who found a way to save a people for himself, to come to be with him forever through his son Jesus. It's an epic story about a God of such grace and such glory then that when you get a glimpse of him, we soon run out of words to describe him. I don't know what's in your email inboxes this lunchtime, and probably neither do you by now, since you've left your desk. Sorry to remind you of that. But I can promise that whatever is there in your email inbox, it is like a speck of dust next to a mountain when put next to these verses. If the epic story of the Bible has a hinge, it is Isaiah. So Isaiah comes in, the prophet of God, and it's like a great big hinge in the Bible story. Through Isaiah, God announces two seismic shifts in the trajectory of the whole salvation plan. And I want to suggest this shift has two parts to it. Number one, it's a shift from the old to the new. And it's a shift from the you to the me. Let me explain that. So firstly, from the old to the new. We've been beginning to see this. You'll see on your sheets there a diagram. We're beginning to see this in the way that the introduction is structured. So chapters 2 to 4, you get a picture at the beginning of chapter 2 of the new Jerusalem. And then at the end of, and then in chapter 4, which is where we are today, you get another picture of the new Jerusalem. And in between, sandwiched in between those two, you get the old world. And the point that we've been seeing is that the old is coming to an end. We've been seeing that, we saw that last week. The old is coming to an end. In other words, Israel under the law is over, God says through Isaiah. It's finished. It has failed because the people have failed to keep their side of the covenant. In fact, this whole world is soon coming to an end because of sin. Therefore, there will be a time when this city, London, is long forgotten, God says, chapter 2. The Lord has a day when he will rise to terrify the earth. The old is coming to an end. But God says, either side, I'm bringing in a new and permanent and better world for my people. In what he calls his New Jerusalem, the nations will flow into it, chapter 2, and they will find peace, everlasting peace, the peace that we long for. So, a shift from the old to the new, and secondly, with this, a shift from the you to the me. See, the old covenant law, the law of Moses, was all about the people's obedience. It was dependent ultimately on God's people to obey the law. If they were to enjoy the promised land, they needed to obey the law. But they wouldn't obey, and they couldn't obey. And so, through Isaiah, God says, this new permanent salvation will depend entirely on me and me alone. I will do it. It's a massive shift in Isaiah from the you to the me. And that is why Christians talk so much about grace, the grace of God. And that is why Christians sing weird songs. I was listening to a song that's recently come out. Weird songs about God that almost sound like love songs. 1,000 hallelujahs and 1,000 more, a recent song tries to sing in praise and thanks to God because of his grace. Why? Because of the shift from the you to the me, as we see in Isaiah. And you know that the conclusion of the whole of Isaiah's prophecy, we're not going to go there now, but if you want to write it down, Isaiah chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Behold, God has become my salvation, they will say. He is my strength and my song. The name Isaiah means the Lord saves. A shift from the you to the me. And I think we see both of these things in this picture of the New Jerusalem that we're going to look at now. We learn three things about God's eternal city, which I've put on your sheets. Number one, it will be a fresh new salvation through the branch of the Lord. That's verse 2. In that day the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honour of the survivors of Israel. Now that word branch of the Lord, more literally, the fresh new shoot. I'm not sure why they translate it branch, presumably because they think it must become a branch to bear fruit. But literally that word, as one commentator has put it, the sprout of the Lord. Don't think of a kind of a big sort of oak branch. Think of a sprout, the sprout of the Lord, the fresh new shoot. And what it is it's a picture of a fresh shoot emerging from the rubble of Israel after exile. Chapter 3, the end is coming for Israel. Chapter 4, in that day, a fresh new shoot which will grow into a glorious inheritance. The point seems to be that God is saying, I'm doing something new beyond the exile. Yes, it will grow out of the soil of Israel, but it will be a fresh start, a new work, new roots. The law of Moses, the old covenant, has run its course, God says. The curses have fallen on the people for their sin. I will bring a fresh new salvation. Notice it will have small beginnings, almost missable, but it will grow into an inheritance to die for. You see that in verse 2? The pride and honour, the fruit of the land, the inheritance, will be the pride and honour of the survivors of Israel. It will grow into an inheritance to die for. It will be the envy of the world. But the picture seems to contain a sense of tiny beginnings, unimpressive beginnings. I don't know if you've ever been to Kew Gardens. We've been a couple of times as a family. No one goes to Kew Gardens to look for the tiny shoots. They go to see the trees. And actually, this picture is a picture of almost missable, unimpressive by human standards, beginnings as the shoot of the Lord breaks out of the soil. but of massive endings, the envy of the world. A glorious inheritance. And notice that this fresh new salvation will be brought about, it seems, entirely through the branch of the Lord. So when I first read this verse 2, I assumed that the fruit of the branch constituted the people of Israel. But if you look closely, that's not quite how the image works. The people are the spectators. They watch as this branch becomes a glorious inheritance. And they punch the air with joy as the beautiful branch of the Lord becomes their salvation, their inheritance. Remember that the people of God in chapter 3 were pictured as the daughters of Zion. And what were they doing? They were seeking to beautify themselves and bring glory to themselves, but in a way that is apart from God and in rebellion against him. And God said, I will take it all away. But here God says to his people, I will give you the beauty and glory that you want beyond your wildest dreams, but I will do it, and I will do it through my branch. Who is this branch? Well, secondly, in this fresh new salvation, God's people will be washed forever by the Lord. That's verses 3 and 4. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst by a spirit of judgment and by a spirit of burning. Notice that in verse 3, the inhabitants of God's city will be called holy. Why? We get the reason in verse 4. Because the Lord shall have washed away their sin. See, the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, the law of Moses exposed sin, but could not remove it. And actually, as we've seen, Isaiah declares at the end of Israel's history, God's people are no better than Sodom after all these years. No better than Sodom. The law exposed sin, but could not remove it. God says, I will do it once and for all. And then my people will be called holy forever. The problem of sin, the sin of God's people, finally dealt with. This is a huge, huge moment. Actually, sin is the problem, isn't it, that has plagued humanity since the very start. Genesis chapter 3. That is where it all went wrong for us. Sin came in. Death had to follow. But if sin is washed away, then the possibilities become endless, don't they? Could we not have life again, like in Eden? Notice he will do it by a spirit of burning and judgment, verse 4. There will need to be judgment. The sins will need to be paid for somehow, but I will wash them away, says the Lord. It's really important to see that God is saying that we can't wash these sins away ourselves. I must do it, God says. That's the point. There are many things we can do. I imagine that most of us have made a cup of tea today for ourselves. We can do that, can't we? We might be able to write a great document, a great email, strike a deal. We can bring in some cash for the firm. We may be able to provide for our families. These are all things that they were doing, the Jews, in chapter 3, in Old Jerusalem. But we can't wash away our sin. We can't wash away the filth in our hearts, the blood stains that only God sees. But God says to his people, I will wash them away forever. Isn't that wonderful? But we should notice one more thing before we move on. And that is that God's people in the New Jerusalem will be a remnant. Did you see that in verse 3? He who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem. Puzzling phrase that, isn't it? Now, this was pictured by those happy few who were left in Jerusalem when God rescued his people from Assyria. If you want to ask questions about that at the end, then do, that's fine. But it points to a greater reality. And I think what we have here is a sobering truth, that though the new Jerusalem will be filled with people from all the nations, from all over the world, it will be a global city, chapter 2. Though it will be an uncountable number, Revelation, chapter 7. Yet, still, they will only be a remnant of all of humanity. I think that's the point. The point seems to be that the majority will not find salvation from God's judgment, but the remnant will emerge washed and safe. Many years later, Jesus would say, "The road is wide that leads to destruction, and many will go there. The road is narrow that leads to life, and only few will find it." I don't know how you guys feel if you're Christians in this city, in your workplace. It's not surprising to find, I think, in light of this text, that being a Christian in this world feels like being a remnant. Yes, we pray that many would come to find life in Jesus Christ, and the offer in this city is open to everyone. And I hope we are praying for our colleagues and this city. And yet Isaiah seems to be saying that when all is done, there will be a remnant. An uncountable multitude, yes, but a remnant of humanity, washed forever by the Lord. So a fresh new salvation in which God will wash his people's sin away forever. And then thirdly, he will wrap them forever in his presence. And that's verses 5 and 6. Then the Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day and smoke and shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for shade by day and from the heat, and a refuge and a shelter from the storm and rain. Slightly strange verses, these, maybe, that might come across us. But I suggest to us that it's impossible to overestimate the beauty and the glory and the significance of these verses. This is the happily ever after ending of the Bible. This is the one that every Disney film is trying to find. But we need to understand the imagery, which is very significant, and it's all about God's holy presence with his people. For that, would you come back to me just keep a finger where you are, but come back to page 80. I think it's important to see this. And the very end of the book of Exodus, this is where the imagery comes from. So it's on page 80, chapter 40. God has rescued his people, and the climax of his rescue, verse 34. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And then verse 38, for the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day, and fire within it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys. This is the climax of the old Exodus. God comes to live among his people in the tabernacle, and the cloud and fire symbolize his presence. Okay, so come back now to Isaiah chapter 4. Can you see what God is saying? This is going to be a second Exodus, but this time a permanent one. And also, can you spot the difference? I don't know if you've played, we haven't played Spot the Difference probably for a while. It's something that perhaps we do when we're a little bit smaller. Perhaps we'll have to do it again in the old people's home at some point. But can we try and play Spot the Difference here in verse 5. I'm just going to read it again. The Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over all her assemblies a cloud by day and smoke by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. Can you spot the difference? The glory of the Lord over the whole of Mount Zion. In the original Exodus, where was the glory? Only in the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies. What's the point? The whole of the new creation will be like the Holy of Holies. The unfiltered presence of the Lord with his people. No more need for barriers. Closeness. This time it will be permanent, no moving around, no lifting off like in the desert, but a permanent home, God dwelling with his people. Okay, but there's more. Because his presence is not only close, but it's intimate in this new Zion. Where it says, over all the glory there will be a canopy, just look down again, verse 5. That word canopy is the word for bridal canopy. It's used two other times in the Bible. One in Psalm 19 to describe the sun coming out of the bridal chamber. And the other one in Joel where he says, let the bride leave her chamber or canopy. In the film Robin Hood, if you remember Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, it's that canopy under which Robin Hood and Maid Marian finally get married. Or indeed in most Hollywood rom-coms, at the end, it's the outdoor wedding, you know, the sort of the canopy. Apparently it still happens in modern Jewish weddings, and it represents their new house together. Now, if that was just one word, then we might overlook it. But we need to remember that this is in the context of God describing his people as like a woman. The faithful city has become a whore. Here in the final consummation of this fresh new salvation, here are his people pictured like his bride, tenderly wrapped in his presence, as a husband might wrap up his bride. Way back in Deuteronomy, at the beginning of Israel's history, God described his people as his treasured possession. And yet, under the law of Moses, he couldn't have her. She was filthy. And yet, through this new salvation, God will finally have his treasured possession, his bride, holy, washed, forever. And did you see verse 6? They will be so safe in his protection. No harm will ever come near them. That's the imagery. They will never have to face the judgment of God again, the rain, the storm. Perfect peace in the presence of God. Well, this is the hope of the Christian. This is the happy ending. And so, a fresh new salvation in God's New Jerusalem, washed forever by the Lord, wrapped forever. God says, this time I will do it and it will be permanent. Well, I wonder what you make of all this. I think if we're Christians here today, number one conclusion, what a wonderful God. What a wonderful God. If you're Christian, you have found this salvation in Jesus through faith in him. And I hope you can take some time to pause and say to God your Father, thank you. I praise you. I worship you for what you have done. You didn't leave me in the shame and judgment that I deserved, chapter 3. You have become my salvation. You have become my strength and my song. Well, if you're with us today and you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, you may have a question. What's all this got to do with Jesus? Well, if that's you, come and ask me or ask a question. Speak to a Christian and they'll be able to help you. One day, this city, London, will be gone. With all of your projects, with all of the brands, with all of the great firms. Where do you want to be in eternity?